Implementation of IPC plan through policy and procedure. The IPC program influences practice through direct actions. For example, policies and procedures, review and evaluation of products and observations. In addition, training and educating HCP can help them develop the skills and knowledge necessary for improving patient care. When considering policies and procedures, the IP must understand that creating written policies and procedures and requiring adherence to them has legal ramifications. Policies and procedures should also be systematically reviewed and updated as needed. Policies and procedures overview. Policies are overarching guidelines that govern the day-to-day actions of HCP, that is, what they must do or avoid doing and when specific policies apply. Policies tend to change infrequently and usually have some degree of flexibility. Procedures are detailed process steps for accomplishing a task. The steps themselves and their required sequence are specified. Procedures have less flexibility but may change more frequently in light of evidence of a more effective method. Policies and procedures represent the structural tools that help promote correct and consistent IPC practices. IPC policies and procedures may be configured in a variety of ways. They may exist as a separate manual or as individual documents within a department policy manual, or they may be integrated into the context of specific policies throughout the facility. In large healthcare organizations, some or all policies may be provided through the corporate office. For healthcare facilities that are part of a healthcare system, policies may be developed by an IDT for implementation within participating facilities. Each facility will still need to customize these policies to their specific needs. In smaller facilities, the IP may be primarily responsible for developing and updating these documents. Policies and procedures should be based on current national standards. National standards are those that are promulgated by reputable, recognized IPC agencies or bodies. IPC policies and procedures must include development and implementation of a system of surveillance to identify infectious or communicable diseases, a process for reporting incidents of communicable diseases, a system that ensures that HCP with communicable diseases are prohibited from direct contact with patients or their food if direct contact will transmit disease. IPC committees are typically responsible for setting IPC policy and procedure at healthcare facilities that have such a committee. Regardless of whether a facility has an IPC committee, the IP is still responsible for bringing as many stakeholders as possible to the table to ensure that policies are both evidence-based and likely to be accepted because each department has been consulted. The title of infection preventionist is relatively new. It reflects the change made by APIC from the former title of infection control practitioner, in part because the new title more accurately describes the broader array of responsibilities that fall to the IP. Including the responsibility to implement policies and procedures that reduce or prevent HAIs. IPs must ensure that the facility develops clear policies and systems to control and prevent the spread of infection from HCP to patient, and vice versa, and to the community. Policies and procedures must be developed using the most current scientific evidence or, when such evidence is lacking, from best practice guidelines and expert consensus documents. Healthcare facility policies and procedures related to IPC can be based on requirements directly provided by a government agency or accreditation body, requirements based on analysis of research studies. By identifying relevant quality studies, the IP may translate findings into real-world practice. Recommendations from voluntary advisory groups, policies and procedures handed down from a higher organizational level, example, hospital affiliation. For example, TJC releases an annual list of National Patient Safety Goals, NPSGs, that healthcare organizations must meet in order to maintain accreditation status. Because an NPSG addresses the organization's obligation to establish processes, policies, and procedures to protect patients from infections, institutions that fail to establish proper procedures and techniques for IPC are potentially liable when an adverse outcome related to an HAI occurs. Two IPC-related NPSGs include compliance with the HH guidelines and managing identified cases of unexpected death or major permanent loss of function associated with HAIs as a sentinel event. Written IPC policies often relate to staff and patient care practices, construction and renovation, emergency management, occupational health, and sterilization and disinfection. General policies are applicable to all HCP within the facility. These policies may form the basis of an IPC manual. Specific policies may also be developed for each unit or area. It is imperative that all policies and procedures be clearly and comprehensively documented. In addition to staff compliance with IPC practices, organizations should establish clear, useful internal practice manuals that are readily available to all staff members, in electronic format, for example. Incomplete or inaccurate documentation can open an organization or individual up to a whole host of legal troubles. It is best practice to develop a list of the specific guidance and other resources used to develop each policy or procedure. This information will be useful should an organization need to mount a legal defense, and it can also help auditors from relevant agencies assess facility compliance with policy and procedure. Providers of direct patient care must implement these policies consistently to benefit patients and protect staff. Legal importance of policy and procedure adherence. Policies and procedures are important for legal reasons because failure to follow them could constitute a breach of duty, which is defined as a deviation from the recognized standard of care. While the laws of various nations differ, generally if a patient wishes to recover damages from a negligent act, the plaintiff may need to establish that a duty existed, that a breach of duty occurred, and that this breach of duty caused an actual injury. Because of how difficult it is to establish that a particular act or omission specifically resulted in infection, patients are rarely awarded damages for HAIs. Nevertheless, mounting a legal defense is very costly. Key point: legal liability is not established merely because a patient develops an infection. Because HAIs are an understood potential complication, unpredictable, and sometimes difficult to prevent, courts have recognized that such infections may occur despite reasonable care. Healthcare providers and facilities have a legal duty to care for their patients. Healthcare providers must exercise a degree of care and skill that could reasonably be expected from a normal, prudent practitioner. And they also have an ethical obligation to act in the patient's best interests. Similarly, healthcare facilities have an obligation to provide a safe environment to protect patients from harm during the course of receiving care. They have a duty not only to establish necessary systems and protocols to promote patient safety, but also to take reasonable steps to ensure that the HCP comply with systems, protocols, policies, and procedures. In the context of HAIs, what constitutes reasonable practices and protocols may change during an outbreak, particularly as IPC measures may need to be revised to reflect new evidence about disease virulence, transmission routes, and key control methods. IPC is dominated by guidelines and directives, and failure to comply with recommended practices is one factor that may indicate a failure to meet an appropriate standard of care. In many areas of practice, courts often look to guidelines or standards of practice to help determine the legal standard of care. Ultimately, complex legal issues that arise should be escalated to the facility's legal representatives for assistance. Policy and procedure review. Policies and procedures should be reviewed at least annually and revised as needed. For example, when services or products change or a new outbreak occurs. This ongoing review process should be documented because review process documentation is routinely inspected during facility surveys. If a healthcare facility does not perform this review on time, it may receive a citation from regulatory or accreditation review bodies. Although the availability of current policies is important, their correct and consistent use by HCP is also required. In addition, ongoing training must be provided and monitored to ensure optimum compliance with implemented procedures. General HAI prevention policies and procedures. Policies and procedures specific to controlling SSIs, pneumonia, and device-associated infections are discussed in more detail elsewhere. Some general HAI mitigation policy and procedure areas include HAI process and outcome surveillance, physical environment sanitation, example, ventilation, water quality, food sanitation, cleaning and disinfection, textiles, waste, pest control, proper use of personal protective equipment, PP, HCP screening and immunization requirements, such as for tuberculosis, and restrictions. Detection of infections at admission and during hospitalization, including after release for certain patients, such as those who may develop a surgical site infection, with SP or TBP as needed. Adherence to evidence-based IPC precautions and authoritative guidelines for infections or other communicable diseases. EMDRO-specific preventions. Isolation procedures for highly immunosuppressed patients. Care techniques for factors that reduce a patient's infection resistance, such as tracheostomy care, respiratory therapy, or burns. Use of disinfectants, antiseptics, and germicides per manufacturer's IFU. Proper use of medical and facility equipment to control infections. Example, negative and positive pressure isolation room equipment, portable air filtration devices. Educating patients, visitors, caregivers, and HCP on infections and methods of transmission reduction in the healthcare facility and in the community. Healthcare facilities should also have policies and procedures that relate to active surveillance, data collection, review, practices of asepsis, and authority/indications for taking cultures from patients or the environment, risks identified in risk assessments, IPC policy and procedure compliance monitoring, evaluation of IPCPs, and their annual IPC plan, themselves, evaluation of disaster preparedness, and compliance with reporting requirements. Key point. The APIC competency model describes the multitude of ways in which IPs are involved in and responsible for supporting the promotion of these and other policies to improve patient and HCP safety in the facility.